Okay, this is Scott, today the Tour Away, Northwest London. Scott's game on Listen Tough GMP, Monday, 15th of June. Our subject is Veli Mitzarim Nachala. A woman comes to the Navi, and she's crying, Navi, you must help me, Mitzar Gadoida Anoichi. I have a terrible, terrible Tzar, Navi, you have to help me. And the Navi says to the woman, what's wrong? And she says, Navi, I'm deeply, deeply, deeply in debt. And the debtor is threatening to take away my children. And that is a gzera shmat, because he's an Obed Avodah Zarah. And Chalila, as a result, he could make my children into Obed Avodah Zarah. The Navi turns to the woman, and he says to her, well, before we tell what he says to her, who is this woman? Why is she so deeply in debt? What is her story? And who does she owe money to? And what happened to this woman? So this woman is Eshes Ovadia. It was during the time of the mighty king Achav. Achav is one of the most successful, mightiest kings we have in our history. He was not actually our king. We are presumably from Malchus Yehuda. He was Malchus Yisrael, but he was a very, very successful and powerful king. Now, the king Achav was evil. He was an Obed Avodah Zarah. The truth is, it wasn't so much himself. He wasn't so bad. If it would have only been him, it wouldn't have been so terrible. It was his wife. His wife was not Jewish from birth. She was a princess. Her name was Izebel. She is the infamous Izebel. She is a terrible, terrible woman. She has a very strong influence on her husband, on the king, Achav. And as a result of her influence on Achav, he will become a terrible, terrible king, and he'll fill Malchus Yisrael with Avodah Zarah. If that's not bad enough, his wife goes on a manhunt against the Nevi'e Hashem. Anyone that's a Navi, anyone that's holy, anyone that's great, his wife is out to destroy them. And she kills all the Nevi'e Hashem that she can get her hands on. Any Navi of Hashem that she can get her hands on, she kills. It's unimaginable. Unimaginable. You have a Jewish king, a Jewish country, and they're killing the Nevi'im. I mean, imagine if Cholila, the Israeli government, Cholila, would have gone on a manhunt and killed the Stipler and killed the Chazan. It would be beyond imagine. That's what happened. And this terrible Izebel influences her husband, and they kill all the Nevi'ei Hashem. At that time, Achav has a manager in his palace by the name of Ovadia. Ironically, Ovadia himself is not Jewish from birth. He's a convert. Ovadia is an Adoimi. He's a convert, and he's a massive tzaddik. Hoyoyore es Hashem ma'oid. He was a massive tzaddik, Ovadia, in Achav's palace. And he sees what's going on, and he's going to fight to try and save the Nevi'im. Again, it's very, very ironic, because the Jews are serving Avodah Zarah. And Ovadia, who's a convert, he's the one who's moisa nefesh in order to try and save the Nevi'im, and he's the tzaddik, and he's the Yirei Hashem. So he sees that Achav is killing the Nevi'im. Incidentally, he himself was a Navi, actually. Ovadia himself was a Navi, and we have his Nevuah in Sefer Nevi'im. He has his own Sefer. What Sefer does he have? Sefer Ovadia, and the Treyot, the 12, very, very short Nevuahs. One of them is Ovadia, that's him. It's also interesting that his whole Nevuah is one Perek, and his Nevuah, he prophesizes the downfall of Edom. He himself comes from Edom. Because I'll say it's like the wood, which is the handle of the axe that cuts down the tree. So you need the wood in order to be a handle for the axe to cut down the tree. Similarly, Ovadia comes from Edom, and he's the one who prophesizes the downfall of Edom, which is still to happen with the coming of Mashiach. So Ovadia is a tzaddik, and he hides the Nevi'im 50 in one cave, 50 in another cave. But he has to support them. And he can't do what you call in Hebrew a magbit. He can't go and raise money because obviously he can't let people know he's hiding these 100 Nevi'im. So he's got to support them out of his own pocket, which is not an easy feat. Go and support a kollel of 100 avreichim when you have to support it out of your own pocket. Let's just add the fact that today we don't really appreciate it in the same way, Baruch Hashem. But food is not a major expense today. Thanks to modern technology, combine harvesters, factories, we can move things. We can make mass production food. And you go 5 shekels for a pound, you put yourself a loaf of bread. But in those days, to make food was a process. You had to go and grow your wheat and take your sickle and cut it and carry it on your back. And then you have to go winnow it and all the different stages. By the time you've made your loaf of bread, it's expensive. It's handmade. It needs 10 processes to be ready. And it was expensive. And Ovadia's got to support 100 Nevi'im. It costs him a lot of money. It's just leeching his resources. It's really using up everything he's got. But if that's not bad enough, what happens next? Eliyahu the Navi, Eliyahu the prophet, is very, very angry with Achav for his averus. And as a result, he's goyzer a terrible famine over Eretz Yisrael. So he's goyzer a famine, and now the whole of the Shomron, that the mouth of Yisrael, have a terrible famine. They have a famine. But who suffers? Ovadia suffers. The King Achav is a wealthy man. He can import food. But the King Achav, he's the one who's suffering. Because the King Achav's got money, but Yehoram's suffering. He's the one who's got to support the 100 Avreichim. How in the world is he going to support the 100 Avreichim when there's a famine and price of food skyrockets? So Nebuch, he's the first one to suffer, and he's got to sell all his property and everything he has. Everything goes. He sells everything because he has to support the 100 Avim. And then he has nothing left. But he still has to support them. So what does he do? He borrows money from Achav with interest. The only person who's got enough money to lend him such enormous amounts of money is Achav himself. Achav is no tzaddik. He's not going to lend the money for nothing. So Ovadia borrows the money with interest for Ribbis. It's also to borrow money for Ribbis, but it's because nefesh. You've got to save the Nevi'im. So he has no choice. He borrows. So again, it's once again, it's very ironic because Achav's making money on the famine. And Yehoram the tzaddik, he's losing money on the famine. It's the other way around. But that's what Yehoram does. And he borrows money, vast amounts of money from Achav. And we know how interest works. You borrow 5 million with 2 million interest. And then he can't pay the 5 million because he doesn't have it, nor the 2 million. So now he owes 7 million. And then he gets a knas for not paying it, plus Ribbis interest on the interest. But 7 million comes 10 million, which comes 15 million, 20 million. Before you know it, you're like completely exasperated and completely deeply in debt. And that's what happened to Ovadia. He's deeply in debt. And then he dies. He dies young. Achav is killed in battle. Both of them are no longer in this world. Time goes by, and the son of the King Achav, who's now the mighty, powerful King Yehoram, is looking at his father's ledgers. And he sees that his father is owed by Ovadia 20 million. And he says, whoa, that's a lot of money. So he gets in his carriage, and he goes off to the house of Ashes Ovadia, and he comes to this tumble-down little, tiny little shed where she lives, completely destitute with the two sons. And he summons her to his carriage, and he says, your husband Ovadia owes my father, and for that matter, me, because I'm his inheritor, 20 million. And she says, no problem. I'll tell you exactly where to find my husband. Go to the Beis HaKvaros, Har HaMenuchos, Chelka Gimel, Shura Dalet, the third cave, there he is. And he says, thank you, but no thank you. You are responsible. And she said, I don't have any money. I have nothing. I'm destitute. She said, okay, we have two children. If you don't pay me 20 million within 2 weeks, not 19 million or 19 and a half million, 20 million within 2 weeks, your two children are by me, which is Gzeirah Shma. She goes into a panic. She ran to the Beis HaKvaros. She started banging on Ovadia's cable. Ovadia, you've got to help me. Listen, he wants to take away my children. What should I do? Ovadia came to her. And he said, my dear wife, you have no idea what is waiting for you in Olam Haba. You have no idea. I've got the most stunning throne here in Olam Haba. Next to me is the throne for you. You have no idea what's coming your way in Olam Haba. And he said, Ovadia, don't talk to me about Olam Haba. Right now, I'm down here in this world and I need help. Ovadia, help me. I'm telling you, Olam Haba is there. I don't want to know about Olam Haba. You're up there basking the glory of God and I'm down here suffering. Just tell me what to do, Ovadia. And Ovadia said, I can't help you. My hands don't reach Olam Haba. Your sky is in the next world. I can't help you in this world. Which in itself, by the way, just in brackets, is a massive lesson for life. Now, people say, you know, if you're good and you're a tzaddik, things will always work out in the end. Not always in this world. Hashem has his own agenda. Sometimes you can be a big tzaddik and a very good person and things don't work out. Ovadia didn't have an easy life. He went into debt because he was saving the Via Hashem and now his own children. And he could not help it in this world. He said, your sky is in the next world. Hashem has his own time agenda. Doesn't guarantee that the person is good. They're going to immediately see the payback for the action. But he can't help them. He said, well, what should I do? He said, I can't help you. Try the Navi. So she runs off the Navi Elisha, and here she is. Navi, got to help me. My two children are going to be taken. There's more details to the story brought in the Mephosh, but it's not a guess for us. The Navi says, what do you have? She came to Navi and said, I have nothing. Bali met the Eli Ma'og. I don't have a husband. I don't have a cookie. I didn't even have a bit of flour to make, but I have nothing. So what do you have? Nothing. Okay, what? Nothing do you have? Nothing. Okay, but Mephosh, she said, I've got a tiny bit of oil. So I'm enough last week. I just didn't have to take and spread one like, tiny bit of oil. I got the Mephosh and say, that there are three mitzvahs that a woman has. Three mitzvahs. The three mitzvahs that a woman has are the mitzvah of Taras Abayis, the mitzvah of Chala, the mitzvah of Lokas Hanayim. So she said, I have no mitzvah. I have no Taras Abayis. I haven't done that mitzvah. I have no bread. I've never made Chalas for years now. I've got no money, so I've got no Chalas. She said, what do you have? I've only got a tiny bit of oil. I've been Mekayim Neiris Shabbos. That I've been Mekayim too. I've just run out of oil now. She said, ah, Neiris Shabbos. Rogel Bener, have a non-bonin Tamid HaChamim. Somebody who's makbid on Neiris Shabbos would have bonin Tamid HaChamim. Through that, I'll give you a miracle. So he told us, I'll tell you what to do. I want to borrow vessels from all your neighbors. Borrow vessels. As many as you can from all your neighbors. Borrow vessels. Fill your house with vessels till your whole house is full of vessels. Once your house is full of vessels, you are to close the door and you are to pour from the original vessel, but not to move the original vessel. And that's what she does. Her children go. It's a very complicated project. They borrow from all the neighbors' vessels, cups and saucers and plates. Anything that can hold anything inside it, they borrow. Anything they can. And the whole house is full of, and it's complicated. Okay, because you've got to give it back after, so you've got to remember who you borrowed it from and write their name on it, like, for this one and this one, because you've got to remember who to give it back to, right? And the whole house is like a tumble-down second-hand vessel shop, because all you've got is cups and plates and saucers, and the whole house is full of vessels. And then her two sons, they borrow all this, and they close the door, and she starts to pause until all the vessels are full. And then she says, bring you the next vessel, and the child says, there is no more vessel. Like, yeah, I'm with a shaman, and at that point, the oil stops pouring, no more oil. The oil stops pouring. Now, at that point, say Chazal as well, the price of oil went up as well, in addition. So the oil stopped pouring, and suddenly the price of oil skyrocketed. Was an absolute fortune. Now, what we really need is the next detail of the story. The next thing that happens is phenomenal, and that is an incredible lesson that we need. But we're going to put it on hold now. We're going to put the story on break. And we'll see the next detail of the story a bit later on in the shiur, which is, again, the tremendous lesson that we need. But at this point of time, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asked the question. And he said that. Hashem created the oil, yesh me'ayin. There is no oil. Hashem created the oil that didn't exist, yesh me'ayin. If Hashem created the oil, asked Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, why didn't Hashem create the vessels as well? Why does she have to borrow vessels from all the neighbors and then Hashem creates the oil? Hashem created oil, let him create the vessels. It was a complicated project. He had to go and borrow vessels from all the neighbors. Hashem created the oil, create the vessels. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, he says, Hashem pours the bracha. Well, we have to prepare the kelim to be mekabel the bracha. Hashem gives the bracha, that's what he does. But we have to prepare the vessels to accept that bracha, and that we have to do. It's more than that. When Hashem gives bracha, it is unlimited. It is the bracha that Hashem gives is limitless. The reason why we are limited in the bracha that we receive is because we limit ourselves by the size of the vessels that we create as much as we are able to accept the bracha. The bracha of Hashem is limitless. The reason why we are limited when we get the bracha of Hashem is because we create the kelim. And according to the size of the vessel that we create to accept the bracha, that's how much bracha we can get. But if we don't create the full size keli or the size of the keli, that's how much bracha we get from Hashem. So therefore, Hashem gives the oil, but not the keli. You have to prepare the vessels, and then I'll give the bracha to Hashem. The Medrash tells a story. This is a story brought down in the Medrash. There was a father, and he had two sons. We'll call them Reuven and Shimon. And the father was seemingly a wealthy man. For whatever reason, the two sons worked very hard to make a living, and they made their basic living, Reuven and Shimon. One day, the father passes away, and he leaves a massive inheritance for his two sons, making them very wealthy. They shared out the inheritance fairly, whatever they did. Reuven gets his chelik, Shimon gets his chelik, everything's fine, everything's shared out, up the other. At this point, Reuven becomes very wealthy, and so does Shimon. Now, I don't know if Reuven was stingy, per se, but he was maybe a regular person, but he gave his mice, and he's just a wealthy man. Shimon is different. Shimon is incredibly, abnormally generous. Shimon has an open heart, an open home. He cares for everybody. And anybody who comes to him for help, he can't say no. So he's got his open door, and somebody knocks on the door. Shimon, you've got to help me. What's wrong? I have to marry off my daughter and I don't have enough money for the nut. How much do you need? 500,000 shekel. How much do you have? 5 shekel. Oh, never. And I've got to marry off and I don't have any money. And if I just think I won't be able to da-da-da-da-da. And Jesus says, never. I've got to help you imagine this course to build a churva achas shel Yerushalayim to be zeichayet. Take 500,000 shekel. The next thing you know, he gets a knock on the shemen. What's wrong? I've got a nephew in Nebuch. My brother's son, and he needs to have an operation in America, and they have no insurance, and they're the idea. Oh, he never hates that. I take the money. But gets to the more he gives, the more people come. Before you know it, he's given away all his money. He gave away all his money, nearly all. All he had left was one little sum of money. It was a substantial sum of money, a little bag of gold coin. That's all he had left. And the date was Hoshana Rabbah, the last day of Sukkot. Of course, the day before that beautiful Yom Tov of Shemini Atzeres. His wife comes and said, you know something, Shimon, you're super generous. And you love everybody. And we appreciate that, your family. But you also have a family. You gave away all your money, gave away all your wealth. But you also have a wife and children. And you also have to care for us. So today is the last day of Sukkot. Go with your last sum of money to the marketplace and buy beautiful things for your family. Buy clothes, presents, food, delicious things. And that way, at least the last day of Yom Tov, the Shemini Atzeres, will be on a high, will be like rich people, will enjoy Yom Tov, and your children will get what they deserve. And then after Yom Tov, we'll be poor again. Okay, we'll just have to manage that. That's fine. But at least for that beautiful day of Yom Tov, we'll be on a high, and it'll just be so beautiful. And he says to his wife, okay, look, he loved his family. And he went off to the marketplace. He goes up to the shuk. And he's walking between the different tables there, and all the different dochanim, he's saying, he bought the little stalls. And there's the most delicious cakes and patisseries and sweets and compotes, and it's all there, and clothes and toys. And wow, what should I buy for my children? And she gives him a big sack, and he's got a pouch of money, and she says, fill up this big sack with all sorts of delicious things for your children. So he has a big sack over his shoulder, and he has a bag of money, and he's walking around, and he looks at the cake stack with blue icing and purple icing and pink icing, and then he sees this and that. And what should I buy? Look at these beautiful clothes and these presents, and they're going to be so excited. And as he's walking, he hears a voice of a woman crying. Now, that's nothing to do with him, because he's busy buying food for his family, but he's the sort of person who can't bear to hear someone in pain. So he goes out of the little shuk, and he goes to a little side alley, and there's a woman sitting on a step, crying eyes out. And he says to my good woman, why are you crying? She goes, ah! Why are you crying? Ah! Why are? Sorry, who are you? I just asked you why you're crying. I have to marry off my daughter. I don't remember if she lost an oven, didn't have an oven. Either way, so if possible, she needs money. And if I don't marry her off, I'll never be able to marry her off, and they won't make a shidduch. So he says, oh, never. And he takes his bag of money and he gives it to her. And now he has no money, and he feels terrible because he felt it was the right thing to do, but he's like kind of failed his family. He doesn't know what to do. And he comes back to the shuk and he says, I can't go home to my family. So he goes to the shul and he sees all this regim, a whole pile of this regim, because Hoshana Rabbah, you don't need this regim anymore. It's like you don't need your string anymore. So he takes his sack and he fills it with a string and says, oh no, they're valueless. A month ago, two weeks ago, they were worth $100. Now they've got no value. He fills the sack with a string and says, however, whatever, this is going to have to be my salvation. He has this big bag of a string over his shoulders and he just tramps off wherever he goes and he finds himself by the port. He comes to the port and he falls asleep. There's a big, I've got to like, just do the story very fast because we want to get to the next point. So just to do the story of the kitta, there's a massive box there by the port. And he's very tired, like he's overcome with an exhaustion. He puts his bag and himself inside the box. He falls asleep. But little does he know that there are the sailors putting all their big boxes onto the ship. And when he wakes up, he is sailing on the ocean blue. He gets out of his box and he's sailing in a ship. And he gets up and he sees a sailor and says, where am I? And so he says, who are you? But where am I? Who are you? I don't know. I was dipping in the box. You're dipping in the box. You'll be let out on our next stop somewhere on the other side of some different land on the other side of the ocean. In the meanwhile, again, let's do this really quickly. There's a king in that land. The Medrash says this whole story. There's a king in this land. And this king is very, very, very ill. And he calls his royal physicians. And he says, I'm ill. Find me a cure. And they cannot find what his illness is. This kind of a corona sort of thing. And they cannot find what the illness is. And he said, listen, you better find. What sort of joke are you? You're my royal physician. You're supposed to know why. And then if you don't give me a cure, I'm telling you that every single one of you will be dead. And they're petrified. So they've got to like pretend that they know how to cure him. And find some medication which is impossible to get hold of. Like, say, you know, there's a root that grows in the North Pole 5 meters under the ground. Go find it. And meanwhile, you know, they're going to save themselves. So they have to find some cure that he can't possibly get hold of. They say, Your Highness, okay, I'll tell you how to cure yourself. You need to drink juice in which was boiled an esrog that a Jew made a bracha on Sukkot. There are no Jews in the province. The king has long banished them. But that's what they tell him. In the meanwhile, the seed has got off the ship and he's walking down this little dirt track with his big sack of this regan. The king turns around and says, you fools, go find me an Esrog. And they say, there are no Jews in the province. I didn't ask you for advice. Find one. And all his soldiers go across the country to find an Esrog. As he sees this going with his bag of the shrike, and suddenly he sees something towering above him. He looks up, there's a soldier. Jew, what do you have in that sack? Nothing. What's in that sack? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? Nothing. It's full. Nothing that would interest you. Nothing that's got value. Nothing I have to pay taxes for. Jew, I didn't ask you for a sermon. Open the sack now. He opens it. There you are. Esrogim. Esrogim, yes. The Jews made the blessing on. Yeah, get on the horse. What did I do wrong? Didn't he say he did anything wrong? Get on this horse. And he gallops off to the king. And the king says, Jew, are these Esrogim the Jews made a blessing on? And he says, yes, they are. The king will take the Esrog and boil it. He wants to drink the water. And once you know, 3 hours later, he's sitting up in bed. 6 hours later, he's standing in bed and all standing out of his bed. And 9 hours later, he's cured. And he says, wow, you're amazing. He says, bring me that sack. Takes the sack, he turns it upside down, pours out all their Esrogim, and he fills it with gold and diamonds. Goes to his royal storehouse, says, fill up the sack, and they do. He then sends an entourage to him, a lover of the seed, all the way back home to his family. And then he's phenomenally wealthy, and he gives a pocket to everybody, and of course, he's got money for his own family. My son's Mashkiach said a chiddush in the name of his father on this story. It might sound a bit exaggerated, but I will prove it to you. I'll show you how true it is. And he said like this. This Yid had a Torah, and he prepared for himself a vessel of his Yeshua. He said, the contents of this sack, these Esrogim, will be my salvation. Take note that the salvation was exactly according to the size of the vessel that he prepared. The sack, the contents of the sack, the Esrogim, was his salvation. And the exact size of the sack that he prepared, that was filled with gold and diamonds, so that becomes his salvation. His salvation was exactly in accordance to the size of the vessel that he prepared. But had he been on a higher madriga, and he wouldn't have prepared the whole sack of Esrogim and limited himself to the sack, but rather taken one Esrog in his hand and relied on that, then his salvation would not have been limited to the sack, and he would have got a completely different salvation on a completely different level, a much higher level of salvation. He got his salvation exactly in accordance of the vessel that he prepared for himself. But had he been on a higher madriga, then his salvation would have been on a whole different level, had he not limited himself to that fact. The Torah tells us the following story. Now, I'm even leaving out Rashi. I'm just reading out the Torah as it says the story and bringing out a message. Of course, we talk about Avraham Avinu, but just to bring out the message. Avraham Avinu is traveling with Lot. This is very, very good for Lot on a spiritual level because he's easily influenced, and therefore you want him to be near Avraham, which is a positive thing. They're traveling together, but there's a problem. Avraham is a wealthy man, Lot is a wealthy man, and there's not enough land for all their sheep. Very simple mathematical calculation. Avraham says to Lot, look, we're traveling together. I have 200,000 sheep. You have 150,000 sheep, 200 plus 150, 350,000 sheep. There's only 10 acres of land. It's only enough for 250,000 sheep. There's not enough land for the two of us. And therefore, logic tells us that split up. You go one way, I go the other. You go right, I go left. You go left, I go right. And that's what happens. They split up. Immediately after they split, Hashem comes to Avraham Avinu with a nevuah. And he says, come to Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem says, kum hishalech l'orko ul'rochbo kilechoet neno. I want to walk the width and the breadth of Eretz Yisrael, the contours of the land, because you will get that land. So immediately after the split, he gets Eretz Yisrael. He's told to walk the width and the breadth of the land, because he will get that land. Take note that Avraham Avinu gets Eretz Yisrael, but it's limited to borders. Not like Yaakov Avinu, who got b'lim etzorim lachlo. Yaakov Avinu got Eretz Yisrael with no borders. Miraculous, without borders, b'li mitzorim nachla. Not so Avraham Avinu, who got Eretz Yisrael confined to borders. Why? Because he works with borders. He said, there's not enough land for the two of us. Hashem said, there's not enough land, you're worried there's not enough space. Ruchni says, good for you, you're worried you're making a chesh from the size of land. So if you see size in land and you limit yourself to teva, then your bracha is limited to Teva as well, then now you're confined to borders. Unlike Yaakov, who was based to believe in Sarnath. The Torah tells us that on the seventh year, we have to leave our land fallow, a holy Shemitah, leave our land fallow. The Torah says that if you're going to ask, how will I live? The Chisoyimah, if you're going to say, how am I going to live? If you're going to ask, how will I support myself a whole year, leave myself fallow? So Hashem, the Tzivisi, Esberchati, L'Shleish Hashanah. I want to know that if you're going to ask this question, how will I live if a whole year I don't work and I don't work on my land? I want you to know that in a 6 years, you're going to get pi shalosh tavua. You're going to get 3 years worth in the 6 year. Wherever one grain or one wheat grew will grow three, you'll have an incredible amount of grain which you'll store and it will last you for 3 years. Say the Mephoshim, that's if you ask. If you ask Hashem, how will I possibly support myself? Hashem, how will I support myself? I'm not going to work for a whole year. Hashem said, if you ask that question, you will get three times the amount on the 6th year. But that's if you ask. If you don't ask, you won't get three times the amount on the 6th year. Because you won't need it. If you ask, it means your brain, your mind, your keli is tied to Teva. You say, Apidarecha Teva, it doesn't add up. So Hashem said, okay, you asked, Apidarecha Teva, it doesn't add up. I told this kid Shmita, Apidarecha Teva, I will sort you out. And I will give you the Teva that you'll have three times produce. You have to work very hard on the 6th year. You have to pour all your food in your storehouses. But it will work out, Apidarecha Teva. But that's because you asked. If you don't ask, and he says, Hashem told me not to work, I won't work. I've got no worries. Hashem told me not to work. I won't work. I have no worries. Hashem is not tied to Teva. Then you won't get three times the amount in the sixth year. You'll get something completely different, completely on a whole different level. And then you'll get Blima Tarim Nachla. Your bracha won't be tied to borders. Then you'll get something else completely. The Eichel Nisporach B'Meos. You'll get the same amount as normal and it will be a completely different level of bracha if you don't. The Gemara says, "Kol Hashem Es Shabbos Zeicha LeBlim Mitzrayim Nachla." Nachla Es Yaakov Avinu BliM Mitzrayim Nachla. If you keep Shabbos, you Zeicha to BliM Mitzrayim Nachla. So Pshat, when you keep Shabbos, you say, "I don't see Teva given my parnasa." Imagine 60 years ago in America, if you didn't work on Shabbos, you lose your job, you have no chance to make money. And the guy says, "I'm keeping Shabbos." What's he saying? I don't see Teva. I see the I do my Shabbos. I see the Eibusha brings you parnasa. If you Shem Es Shabbos, you Zeicha to BliM Mitzrayim Nachla. Nachla Es Yaakov Avinu. The Ben Yehuda said, if you do Tosefes Shabbos, then you're zeichet to b'lim Torah Nachla. In other words, you take your Shabbos early, you take it out late, because if you break the borders of Shabbos, if you don't border yourself on Shabbos, you break the borders of Shabbos, then you're zeichet to b'lim Torah Nachla, says the Ben Yishchai, the Ben Yehuda. The Hasidim say, that's Shabbat kochoil v'al tistart labris. If you make your Shabbos into choil, in other words, you turn your choil into Shabbos, you do Tosefes Shabbos, then you'll never need a loan. You'll never need help from people, because then you'll be zeichet to direct from Hashem, because then you connect yourself directly to Hashem. Because you're on that level of the tachanun, you're not limiting yourself to the physical way of getting parnasa. Let's come back to the story of Eshet Avadia and let's see something really, really, really phenomenal. Again, let's come back to the story of Eshet Avadia and see something really, really, really phenomenal. Eshet Avadia, she gets all the vessels in the house. The house is full of vessels. And then she tells the sons, bring all the vessels. They tell her to pour, and she pours, and she fills up all the vessels as well. Bring me another vessel. There is no more vessels. And then the price of oil skyrockets. She has 30 million worth of oil in her property, in her little house. What does she do next? What's the next stage of the story? Again, she's filled up all the vessels of oil. She's got 30 million worth of oil in her little house. What does she do next? If you ask me what she should do next, it's very obvious. Sell that oil and use that money to pay your debt, obviously. I'm sure you would say the same thing. What she's supposed to do next, sell that oil and use that money to pay her debt. What's obvious to me, and probably obvious to you, was not obvious to her. She didn't chup that's what she's supposed to do. She did not chup that that's what she's supposed to do. So she's sitting in the house and she doesn't know what to do next. So she went back to the Navi and she says, Navi, I don't know what to do. I did what you said. I filled my house with oil. What do I do now? What's my next step? How do I sort out? I'm still in debt with the king. How do I sort out my debt? She didn't understand to sell the oil. That didn't occur to her, so to speak. It was as if the Navi had told her, say 100 kafir kafir. Fine. So she went home, said 100 kafir kafir. Now what do I do? I'm still in debt. So it's the same thing. She did what the Navi said, pulled all this oil like the Navi said. Now she comes back to the Navi. What's my next step? What do I do now? The Navi said, I'll tell you exactly what to do. Take this oil and sell it. And with the money that you will get, you will pay off the debt. Va'at tichki benoisa, and you will support yourself from the remaining money, says the Medrash. Va'at tichki benoisa, Ad Tchias Hameisim. The remaining money will support you until Tchias Hameisim. This money is blessed. This money will never finish. It will continue through all the generations. You will always make money through this money. Until Tchias Hameisim, you will always be supported through this money. Your family will never, ever have any financial strain, ever, until Tchias Hameisim. And then you won't need money anymore because that's very Tchias. If there's one family in the history of the world that has never had financial problems, it is her family. They have never had financial problems. Every family has its ups and downs, okay? If our grandparents are wealthy, then we're not, and our grandchildren will be wealthy. The world works in circles. Those who are wealthy before the First World War were poor. After the First World War, almost everybody was poor during the time of the Tsarist rule in Russia. But one family never, ever, ever was short of money. The descendants of Aisha Savajit. Wherever they are and whoever they are, never. And when Corona comes out, they happen to be selling masks. They're always the ones who are on top of the wave. She was zoicha that the money will never finish forever. Let me explain you what happened here. This woman was on such a high level of bitachon that she did not see the vessels of oil as her salvation. She was on such a high level of bitachon, she didn't tie herself to Olam Hazeh. All the vessels of oil are there. That is your salvation. Understand that. Sell that oil. She did not understand that because she was in a far higher level of bitachon. She said, not the oil is my salvation. Hashem is my salvation. With all the oil in front of her eyes, she walked straight back to the Navi. How is Hashem going to help me? Where's my salvation? The Navi says, wow. You didn't see the oil as your salvation. You came straight back to Hashem. So you didn't limit yourself to this Teva to bring your Yeshua. So now you get your Yeshua directly from Hashem. And when it comes directly from Hashem, it is unlimited. It is belimitar. It will last till Chiyas HaNesim. Had she sold that oil, she would have got the money from oil. She would have paid off her debt. She would have been a wealthy woman for the rest of her life. Her children would have been wealthy. And then it would have gone like all money goes eventually. But because she was above that level, and she went directly to the Navi, and she didn't see this as her salvation. She went directly to Hashem and didn't limit herself to the oil, so her Yeshua wasn't limited to the oil. The oil is a derech ha-teva way of getting her money. If she would have seen that, she would have been tied to teva, and teva can make you wealthy for as long as it lasts. But she was one step above. She was like the yid with their sroigim, who didn't put their sroigim in the sack. She, with her vessels of oil, was like the yid with their sroigim in the sack over his shoulder. He saw that this sack of the sroigim will bring him salvation. He tied it to teva, which is fine. But then his Yeshua was tied to his level, to what he understood. And therefore, her oil would have been the same. She would have sold the oil and become wealthy as a result. But she was on a higher level of bitachon. She was as if the yid of the sack would have taken one esrog in his hand and not limited himself to teva. She didn't limit herself to these oils. Therefore, her Yeshua is being saved. I want to bring the shiur to a very practical level. And Mr. Shem, if there'll be a shiur next week, depending whether there'll still be Zoom, then we will see another whole half of this shiur, because this is literally only half the shiur, on a very, very, very practical level and understand it, how Hashtadus works, etc., and see many incredible, incredible stories, and really incredible stories and examples of Mr. Shem, if we have a second half of the shiur. But just to wind up, let me just bring it as an example. We're now going through the terrible coronavirus, and many people have been hurt in their front. Let's not discuss Khalila. Those are hurt medically, but many people have lost their Makorah Parnassah, some people worse than others. But some people have like completely lost their Makorah Parnassah. People that have, let's say, Ulam Smachot, they give out wedding halls, caterings. So some people have completely lost their Makorah Parnassah as a result of the coronavirus. Now, you have to understand something. Let's say I teach in American families. Okay, all the American families are closed now. So how do you deal with the situation? Like, you know, Makorah Parnassah, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to people again? Chasnot. If a person sees in their mind, I have my parnasa because I have a chasana hall, because I am a caterer and I've already got bookings for the next year, or because I have whatever it is, I've got the jobs that come out all written down, I know I've got my job, and that is my mekor parnasa. Then comes coronavirus, and suddenly these people are in serious trouble because we no longer have a chasana hall or whatever it may be, and whoever's business is affected by corona has lost their mekor parnasa and they seriously have a problem. But if a person says, I have parnasa from the Eibishter, who happens to channel it through the chasana wall or through this or through that, but it comes from the Eibishter and doesn't see the Makor Parnassah as the Makor Parnassah, but rather Hashem, then come coronavirus, they will not be affected. How come we'll see that next year? They will not be affected because Hashem is the Makor. It depends how much we believe, how much we believe. If we believe our Makor Parnassah is our Makor Parnassah, then we're limited. If we see it coming from Hashem, then it will not be affected. And it will come through some other, we'll finish with it. Imagine an Avrich from America. He comes to live in Eretz Yisrael with his wife. He has no form of support, but his father's a wealthy man. And his father says, I will give you money every month. So he has two banks, Bank Yisrael and Bank Leumi. And his father transfers money through Bank Yisrael. Every month, Rosh Chodesh, he goes, he takes $4,000 out of the bank. His father transfers through Bank Yisrael, and he supported happily. One day, he reads the news, Bank Yisrael has crashed, and the bank is closed. There's no more money. You can't take anything out of the bank. It's finished. He goes into a panic. How am I going to support myself? I have no more money. He phones his father, Daddy, I'm ruined. What happened? Bank Israel closed down. His father starts to laugh. He said, Bank Yisrael never gave you money. I gave you the money. I just transferred it to Bank Yisrael. They closed down. Don't worry. Go into bank. Loan me. I'll transfer it for that. It was just, it suited me to part this with Bank Yisrael. You want to go? Go to bank. Loan me. I'll give you the money. So bank. Loan me. Nothing's changed. I'm giving you the money, not the bank. There's a second guy who worked his whole life very, very, very hard. He saved up money and he stored it. He put it in his Bank Yisrael. Now he's on a pension. He doesn't have a pension. He lives off that money. Bank Yisrael crashes. The guy's in trouble. He has no more form of support. It's the same with us. If we see Bank Yisrael, our job, as our Makor Parnasa, then when the job crashes, we've crashed. But if we see our Makor Parnasa comes from the Eibishter, just he channeled it, he just made a transfer through Chasna Hall or through catering, wherever it may be, then nothing crashes. Because the Eibishter is the same Eibishter. He is not limited to heaven. If you ask how, that's the thing. We're supposed to be above the asking how. And that, Mitzvah Hashem, if we have an opportunity, we'll see next lesson, next year, that Mitzvah Hashem, we'll see many beautiful examples of this, stories of this, Mitzvah Hashem. It will work out next week.